Benny, a very special episode of the Magoos coming up. We've been teasing a special guest for a couple of weeks now. We want to have some really deep conversations with this person, and he's been good enough to give us his time. So in this episode, we'll discuss some really heavy things. We'll have a bit of fun as well, as we always do. Alan Christensen is joining the podcast. It's a really special episode, so I definitely would encourage everybody to make sure they sit down, have a listen. We're also going to whack this up on our YouTube page. It's such an important chat. We want to make sure that it reaches as many people as possible. So we'll make sure that gets up there. As always with these sort of conversations, if they do stir up any sort of reactions in yourself, that's perfectly fine. There's a whole lot of online resources, be it about the online gambling that we're going to speak about, gamblinghelponline.org.au. Of course, we also mention suicide as well along the way. So Lifeline is out there as well as like Kids Helpline, Beyond Blue, those sort of things. So please make sure you do look after yourself. But we're absolutely wrapped about this chat, aren't we, Benny?
Yeah, absolutely. We may as well get straight into it, Jake, because this is a big one.
The Magoos. The Magoos.
Benny, we've been teasing a big guest on the Magoos for a couple of weeks now, and it's here. We're absolutely pumped to have Alan Christensen on the show joining us from the freedom that is Brisbane in a certain sense, in these crazy COVID times. He's fresh out of his opposition analysis, so we're hoping he can give us a couple of little tidbits that'll help the Lions get over the line this weekend. Alan, welcome to the Magoos.
Thanks, fellas. Really appreciate you having me on and being a bit patient with me. I understand I've kept you waiting for a little bit. So,
as we said, we're in Melbourne, so honestly, whenever you need to do it, we can do it at 2 a.m., we can do it at 2 p.m. That's just the times we're in.
Thanks for having me.
Any given time, any time works. So is there any little tidbits that came up in your opposition review that might just give the Lions the edge this weekend?
We're obviously playing St Kilda, so it's going to be a bloody good game. It's, you know, they're playing really well. Their small forwards are pretty dangerous, so I think the boys will be trying to shut that down and getting them to do, like, get them kicking long down the line as much as possible and sort of, you know, really slow down their fast plays because, they're pretty dangerous when they're up and going, as everyone's seen.
I actually can't wait for this game. And this podcast, just for FYI, will be coming out after the game. So good luck to Brizzy on the weekend. But obviously, Sir Doug Nicholls' round coming up. It's huge for Brizzy with quite a number of, you know, Indigenous guns in the side. You've managed to design the jersey. So how'd that come about and what were the inspirations behind that design?
Yeah, I'm not an artist, so it was hard. what a trial and error. Just trying to, you know, work out what looks okay, what portrays a story really well, what can work from a design point of view. And then I sort of really wanted to lean on the story part of it and sort of, you know, bring back the, you know, there's a lot of jumpers out there that like a lot of intricate detail and I just can't do that. Like that's just not for me. So I really wanted the story to be, the main part of it and getting everyone's totems and, you know, telling the story that way from where they're from, where their family's from, being able to represent all the players on a jumper, the six AFL players and the two AFLW players. I think it's a pretty special jumper and hopefully, you know, when the boys and girls look back, you know, 20, 30 years down the line, they're looking back and they're going, oh yeah, we had that jumper where we were all represented in a pretty crazy year.
Yeah, awesome. Those jumpers every year just continue to outdo themselves, I reckon. They just look so good. And, I mean, I'm a Carlton fan, Alan, and I think looking at the Carlton one this year, we're obviously wearing the white Guernsey against the Gold Coast this weekend, and I think it should just be the permanent away jumper. Like, it just adds that colour and adds that sort of spirit to it. It's, and obviously teams have been wearing them sort of more and more. Do you reckon that it'll get to that point where teams are just wearing them almost all at every single opportunity they get?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the fans love them. From a merchandise point of view, I think they sell more than any other jumper by your home jumper. So it makes sense and they look beautiful. Like I saw that Carlton one and it's like subtly beautiful. So it's a really, really nice jumper. And of course, there's a story behind each one of those as well.
Well, I think yours is beautiful too, Alan. So great job.
You say you've got no artistic ability. I tell you, compared to what we would be able to chuck together in that realm, you are streets ahead.
We've been running the same Magoo's logo since the beginning, and that's all it is.
I get my missus' brother to do all our logos and stuff, so don't come from here.
you spoke about that in a few years' time. Are you hoping that people look back at the jumper and all that legacy sort of stuff? So if we go back to the beginning of your AFL journey at Geelong, you played a premiership in 2011. Can you just try and describe to us how good that was, like all that work that you put into to realise that dream so early on in your career?
Yeah, I guess I was drafted to end 2009, and I sort of had to ply my trade in the reserves for a whole year. I sort of didn't even look like playing, even though I was playing some pretty good footy, but coming in off a premiership year, side pretty mature and settled. I think we only had two debutants or three debutants that year. And then coming to that 2011 season, I knew that if I put in the hard work, I was a really good chance to sort of, bring something different to the team. And that year was weird because the sub rule was in. So I was sort of playing a lot. As a sub, I think I played five or six games out of my first nine as the sub. So it was a very strange time. But I got dropped at the end of round seven, I think, or round eight, and then had to wait until round 13 or 14 to get back into the side. And once I did, I sort of just never let it go. And from there, it was pretty smooth sailing. I really became a key cog in that team and brought something different. Going into the finals, I was actually a bit more nervous going into the prelim than I was the grand final, because being a 20-year-old bloke who's playing his 18th game, you always got that, if I don't play well today, they might bring in a more senior player. So, and I think my first couple of touches, I tried to take on Luke Shuey and I got run down holding the ball. And the other one, I handballed it and it just went straight to, I think it was like Martin Dukoski or something like that. Just went straight to him. I'm like, oh no, don't do this. I was lucky enough to kick a couple goals and played pretty well that game. But yeah, going into that grand final, it's something that sort of, as I get towards the back end of my career, I'll think about it a little bit more. And the build up to it, just sitting in the car, going to the game, and then it was a whirlwind running out there. So many people in the stands, never played in anything like it. Like I was lucky enough to play in some pretty big games, them Geelong Hawthorn games, Geelong Collingwood, Geelong Richmond, to be able to play in those games. But nothing compares to sort of that sound when you're running out and the song's going and everyone's singing or booing. And yeah, it was crazy. And just the way we played that day, never really felt like we were going to lose, to be honest, even though it was pretty close. It was pretty crazy. I remember, I think halfway through the last, we were three or four goals up and Cameron Ling walked past me and he goes, "Guess what?" I was like, "What?" He goes, "You're a premiership player." I put out a word there. Yeah, he goes, "You're a premiership player," and I remember it. And it's probably something that he probably would never remember, but I remember it as clear as day. It's just like, yeah, you're a premiership player. And I was just walking back to the fourth line. I was like, wow, like this is great. Wow. I'm like, there's 15 minutes to go, boys. Like we're not done now. But that was the confidence, I guess, of that group.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like I actually get sort of like sweaty palms when you're just telling that, and just heart racing at the MCG in front of everyone. Like, it's just, that's incredible. But you talk about that era, that Geelong era, obviously insane. It was an incredible team for many years. Still are a very, very good mob. Now you're fast forward to today and you are with the Lions and a very good up and coming team. If one of the contenders, I'd say, for this year. Do you spot any similarities or even differences between that Geelong team in 2011 to Brisbane now?
Probably the similarities at the moment are probably before I got to Geelong, where around that 2005, 2006 years at Geelong, unfortunately, I think they went out in that semi-final to Nick Davis goal in 2005, but that sort of catapulted them onto to bigger and better things. So if you look at their 2007, 2008 grand final loss, a lot of younger 23, 24-year-old guys, and that's sort of where we're at. So I guess that's the difference, is when I was coming through, I was just a baby and I was sort of, you know, bringing something a little bit different to the team, where all the young guys are the ones who are making the biggest difference. Yeah, we've got some really good experienced players like Dane Zorko and Jared Lyons, Lachie Neal, Steph Martin when he's up and going. But you can see the brunt of the work has been done by Hugh McCluggage and Jared Berry and Eric Hipwood, Cam Rayner. They're all under 22, 23, and it's just that's probably the most exciting things for Lions fans, is that they're the players that are going to take us forward, and they're the players that are going to be around for a long time.
And you talk about the names that you reel off, then there's such incredible depth that's been building at the Lions for some time now. So you yourself, you're not in the side currently. How tough has it been to try and get back in the side without the kneeful and, you know, all those sort of COVID restrictions where you can't really prove yourself in that match day setting as often as you probably would like? How hard is it to try and put your name back up in lights for selection at the moment?
Yeah, it has been hard. Like, I've sort of, first half of last year and this year, probably the first time in my career, bar injury, that I've been really on the outer of a team. It's it wears away, and especially now, because it is such a weird year. You don't get to, like, last year when I was out of the team, I got to go play kneeful, and like I got to go tear up the kneeful, like, and I got to put my foot forward every week, and like I showed the coaches, like, Bundy's had, you know, another 30 odd and kicked a couple or whatever, where now you're playing in 15v15 scratch matches against, like, we played St Kilda and North Melbourne in a combined team on the weekend, and it's on these small ovals, and, you know, players are getting pulled off because they're emergencies for that night, and then the game goes down to like 16v16 and sort of all over the shop. You just got to keep, like, at the end of the day, you just got to keep going. Like, there's enough things going on injuries wise to keep the motivation level up, to not just, you know, eat whatever you want and just get blind every weekend. And because I could almost guarantee there'd be players who have just completely given up and just slip back into normal routine of a person who might be playing footy on the weekend and go and have, you know, a few beers, you know, on the Saturday and Sunday night, and that's fine. But as a professional athlete, like, you got to keep everything in check and try and, you know, get the most out of your body. And yeah, as I said, there'd be players who have done that and realised that, you know, we don't know about list cuts and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, there's a few of us players on the outer at the moment who, if there's a couple of injuries or dropping form, like, there's a chance to go play finals. So we got to keep going. So that's the main motivation keeping me going.
Yeah, absolutely. It's different times. Obviously, you don't want to see anyone go down, but yeah, there's only so many, you know, limitations of to showcase what you've got at the moment. So it must be a bit hard.
Oh, well, that's why I was happy to jump on the Magoos, boys.
Beautiful, mate. Yeah. your teammate Mitch Robinson obviously made some headlines this week over some comments about Tom Lynch. What were your reaction to those comments? You know, anything in it, or was it just really just Robbo being Robbo?
Oh, definitely, like 100% Robbo being Robbo. He's loud. Like, I'm number three, he's number five, and I just look over him sometimes. I'm like, mate, just put a sock in. So, but that's just him. Like, he shoots from the hip. everyone knows that. Like,
yeah.
He didn't deserve to get the criticism that he got. Like, I don't know Tom Lynch. Like, I don't know him as a bloke. I don't. Like, we play him once a year, so not really a comment I'd make, but everyone knows Mitch. Like Mitch, Mitch thinks something and he says it. Like, and that's why people love him too.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I love him.
I think the commentary around all that too was like, so Mitch had an opinion about someone that he's obviously had a certain amount of dealings with that sort of, that's why he has that opinion. And then he was, you know, people calling for him to apologise for, you know, his feelings towards another person. And it was just seems a little bit off. You know, it's always caught in that hamster wheel of we want players to speak their minds, but then when they do, we don't want them to say things too individualised.
Yeah, it's a bit crazy, and that's why I guess like he has his podcast and like all his Twitch stuff, and that's why like I do what I do with like my podcast. I just, it gives you a platform to speak the way you want to speak, and like it's sort of, I think the more and more players that are actually able to do that, the better off we'd be. And when another player says something like that, then they get the less reaction out of it, and it just sort of becomes part of the norm, and I don't know, it creates conversation. So it's pretty funny.
Yeah, I reckon.
Perfect little segue there. As you mentioned, and you do have your own podcast called Addicted to the Game, which we suggest all our Magoo's listeners out there head over and have a listen to that. What were the motivations around putting that together, and how have you enjoyed branching out into that podcasting world?
Yeah, I guess the motivations for it was that I couldn't really trust the journalist to portray my story the way I wanted it to be portrayed. Me and my manager had a couple people come forward and say, oh, you know, I can write it. I'd also spoken about it at a couple of like music festivals like that go on in Brisbane. I'd spoken about it there, had journalists like, oh, it's out in the open now, like if someone will pick it up, if you don't speak about it now, then I'm just gonna run it. I'm like, yeah, all right, cool, like whatever. And then I was just sitting down with my brothers one day, I'm like, maybe we should like start a podcast and we can talk about these things, and if we get the opportunity, like we get to speak to other people about what they've been through as well, and try and create a platform where other athletes or just everyday people can come and speak about one, their addictions or their mental health battles. And it's sort of grown to what it is now, where we've got a nice little following and people actually listen to what we say, and we're sort of carving out a nice little niche place in the, not anti-gambling, but we're like pretty strong in our thoughts about advertisements and sponsorships around sport in Australia. So it's great. I really like it, and being able to speak my mind and that sort of stuff is really good.
Yeah, I've definitely become more and more of a fan of it as well. Only really heard about it recently, but just been smashing through the episodes. And honestly, if you're listening at home, go give them a follow and go have a listen. But for those, I guess, who are listening to this and don't know your story, Alan, would you be able to give some sort of, you know, quick sort of synopsis of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a recovered gambling addict, so I haven't had a bet for coming up on 6 years in October. I guess I just grew up around it. I was sort of just like a lot of households, you know, horses were always on. And that was just me. Spring Carnival would come around, Dad would chuck $1 or $2 on for me. And I was a pretty young tacker, and I sort of, you know, got hooked on the thrill of that at a pretty young age. Then sort of, you know, growing up with my mates and my friendship group, they were very, very much the same. We were all very much wired the same. We used to do things like we'd get the form, we were 16, 17, and we'd get the form guide in our homeroom, like when we should have been doing stuff, we'd have the form guide out, like picking, and then like we didn't really have phones, so we'd try and pick who would win. And then we'd come at the end of the day and we'd see who had won and like have a tally and all that sort of stuff. So we're all, as I said, we're all wired pretty much the same. And then I guess the difference was when we all turned 18 and left school, I was earning a bit more cash than them and I had a bit more spare time, and it sort of developed from that. So I, over the course of the next 5 years, I've probably lost close to $300,000. The worst thing, I guess, about being an addict, and I guess anyone who's probably dealt with anyone who's had any sort of addiction is the personality that you can become. So became very manipulative, very much a liar, and everything that I did in life was geared towards either getting money or getting tips from people or that sort of stuff. So not a lot of my relationships were very genuine, but I was able to sort of, you know, rectify that. But yeah, it's a pretty dark time in my life, but the path I walked, like, I wouldn't change it because I had some really good times. I'm not going to – I don't ever deny that, some of the times at the races with my mates or all that, but some of those dark times where I was losing, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars, and at 2 a.m. when, you know, just should have been sleeping, preparing for a game, I was up, you know, having a bet. It's pretty full on, but, yeah, I'm where I am now, and sort of I've learnt my lesson, and, you know, I can only go forward, and hopefully – people hearing my story, they can sort of reach out and go, oh, I was in the same boat, or how'd you do this, how'd you do that? So I guess that's where I am now.
Yeah, no, it's such a powerful story, and it's awesome. I absolutely love what you're doing. I think it's huge. So yeah, just keep up the great work, really. Obviously lockdown at the moment, for take myself, for example, I the last time I had a punt on the footy was probably grand final day. And then because I just sort of dabble every now and then, but in the last probably 3 to 4 weeks, I've had a few, you know, what we call cheeky multis on the footy and NBA. How have you seen sort of lockdown and the rise of sports gambling, and in particular those who don't usually punt that often?
Yeah, I think that's been the biggest growth in sporting companies and where they actually put their ads. So during live sport, they're not actually allowed to run ads before 8:30. Obviously, live sport usually goes after 8:30. So after that 8:30, they pound the advertisements. The biggest thing is now with advertisements is they're not betting ads anymore. You see Sportsbet average games. That's not a betting ad. You see the TAB ad where they play on the emotions and they say, oh, like if you bet, like this money will go to them and this will go to them. And, you know, then they're all doing different things. So the casual bettor is the person who hasn't had a lot of exposure to, you know, the thrills and the, you know, high emotion that comes with gambling. They're the ones that they try to hook in. So they're like, all right, I'm going to deposit 20. Oh, what? Like, I've got another 20 here. And then they go, oh, we see you've haven't had a bet for a week. If you put in 50, we'll put in 50 as well. But, and then it just, the cycle goes on and on and on. And then, yeah, as you see, like with the ads, they go, all right, if I bet, like I'm always having a good time. I can't lose because if I don't go first, I get second and third, I'm going to get my money back. So there's no risk involved with gambling, and I guess that's the scary things with kids as well. Like, you know, there's studies done where kids 6, 7, 8 know 3 or 4 gambling companies, which is mind blowing.
Yeah,
like that shouldn't be happening. So there's a lot of things and a lot of layers behind it. We're just trying to become sort of, you know, the everyday spokesperson, I guess. Like we're just 4 average blokes just talking absolute smack, but at the end of the day, we've got a bit of a story behind us, and we feel like a lot of people would relate to us a bit better than they would to, you know, like some, you know, doctor in bloody all that sort of jargon. they'd rather hear us talking about telling, you know, gambling companies to pull their heads in than, you know, trying to work through legislation and all that sort of stuff. So I think that's where we came in.
Yeah, and that's where it all starts, though, isn't it? I mean, that just gives that sort of voice, and then sort of builds from there. I think it's going in the right direction. I mean, you said the before 8:30 rule earlier, and before then there wasn't that rule. So obviously, it is a start. I think you look back at photos in the 70s and 80s, and you see all the, you know, the cigarette packaging all that branding and stuff like that behind at the G and all that kind of stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, hopefully our kids or, you know, even our grandkids look back at, you know, 2020 highlights and go, what the hell were they doing back then?
Yeah, I hope it does end up like that, because obviously smoking, we all know what that can do, and hopefully we can change the messaging around gambling.
So we speak about quite often on this show social media and the benefits of social media for players in terms of brand and stuff, but then also the negative side of it. And I think coming into that gambling conversation now, as we sort of heard over the last few weeks, is the abuse that players get, not only for poor performances now, but people abusing them about costing them bets and multis and all those sorts of things. I'm just really keen on your opinions in terms of how that can play on a player's psyche. As Mitch Robinson sort of spoke about all the messages he gets, and then Josh Bruce sort of backed it up. Have you been subjected to anything similar to that? And what's your advice for players out there dealing with social media?
Yeah, after I left Geelong, I actually got off all social media for quite a while. I just had like a little private account on Instagram, just sort of minding my own business. But I guess since we started the podcast and that, we've obviously had to open ourselves up a bit. Yeah. And I've had some funny ones. Like I've actually been abused because I'm a gambling addict because I cost them their bet. I was just like, I'm like, mate, like this doesn't make sense. Like, how am I the gambling addict who's been angry? I was just like, I'm sitting there trying to decipher what this bloke's saying to me. Mm. And but other than that, like, I guess what we talk about, we're sort of, as I said, we're quite niche in what we talk about. We have a lot of support for that. I guess the main stuff that comes along with me is like my Indigenous side and the racism online. But in terms of the gambling stuff, I understand that, you know, I've seen a few messages from the boys like saying, I hope you do your ACL and all this sort of stuff. It's just, it's mind blowing what goes through someone's head when they actually lose a bet to actually go, oh, I'm going to get on Instagram, I'm going to find this bloke and tell him to do an injury that's going to cost him a year of his life. It's just, it's absolutely mind blowing. So yeah, it's crazy. But I really enjoy interacting with people. Like, I feel like I'm pretty like approachable as a professional athlete. Like, as you boys know, like I reply pretty quickly. If I don't, like, my brothers will on the account. So yeah, I feel like it works better when you show a bit of personality and you actually reply to people and than hiding away. And I think that just shows like sort of a more of a normal person than might portray. And I think especially with probably like a reputation that I had, because with my gambling, as I touched on before, there was a lot of other stuff that came with it. Like, I can actually show like, I've been through this, I'm not the person that I was, and this is sort of where I am now. So I think it's it definitely does have its positives.
It's such a, you can go into just a rabbit hole of like, how do you sort of fix this social media issue? And it's not something, I don't think we can just go, everyone needs to stop, you know, DMing random AFL players and telling them to do their ACL. Like, that goes a long way, but there's just so many dickheads out there, and I think there always will be, I'm afraid, which is not, doesn't say much about, you know, what I see in the future. But it's sort of like, and you were obviously mature enough to get off social media for a while, and other than the podcast stuff, which you kind of have to be, but from a personal point of view, like, that says a lot as well. So it's like sort of taking yourself out of the equation a bit can go a long way also.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talk a little bit of football and stuff like that because we try to give a bit of an insight on what it's like to be an AFL player, but we try and steer clear of a lot of that stuff, and I think we can avoid a lot of the negativity that comes with being a professional athlete. And there is a lot out there, like being on it and seeing some of the stuff that's written about AFL players, I'm like, you sort of just got no idea. Like, you don't live in our shoes, so how can you comment? Like, I wouldn't I wouldn't comment on a plumber or a concreter and what they're doing in their life. Like, I couldn't do that. And a lot of people couldn't do what we do. So, like, there's no need to comment.
Yeah, 100%. Going back to sort of the gambling side of things, and would you give any advice for someone who is, you know, not necessarily going through something like gambling addiction, but any advice for someone who can help a certain loved one who might be going through it? Because a lot of the time they're not, admittedly an addict, or it's not that bad, quote unquote. So you got any advice for those who aren't going through it but who want to help?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess the big thing is, like, with your relationships, like, it'll test you out. Like, a person with maybe not have an addiction but might have an issue with gambling, you can start to read some signs. So, like, hiding, like, their phone, or, they come real quiet, like, around certain times, especially around race times. So, like, if you're on the weekend, between 12 and 5 o'clock, and then you see a sudden spike in happiness or ups and downs in sort of depressive states. We've sort of said that, like, being pretty, and we found, like, being, like, pretty open and confrontational can work sometimes, but also just saying, hey, like, I can see this is happening. Like, how come every time, every 4 or 5 minutes you're going out of the room, like, what are you doing? Like, there's an addict will always find a way to hide what they want to do. And that doesn't matter if it's alcohol, drugs, shopping, the punt, whatever. They'll always find a way to manipulate and talk in a certain way that throws their loved ones, their friends, family, whatever, off the scent. So just being able to identify the signs, and there's plenty of websites out there. We're really lucky to be supported by Gambling Help Online. And, like, if someone is actually worried about that, they've got plenty of stuff, and you can just log on and have a look and see, like, how do I start a conversation? What are the signs of a person who might be struggling? Even just things like if you're married or you've been together and all of a sudden you can't, your partner doesn't want to pay for stuff anymore, might be another little thing. So, yeah. And this is from personal experience. I know every trick in the book, like, oh, you pay, I'll get the next time. All knowing that I just wanted to save $20 because I wanted to load up on a thing in 10 minutes or something. Like, yeah, I know what it's like. I've been there.
Yeah, no, it's great. You spoke on one of your early episodes. You actually spoke about Neil Barman, how much he wanted to help you when, you know, both at Geelong at the time. You've come and said how grateful you are for that, and for how he's tried to help out as much as he could. On like a more local level, what are some things, you know, local coaches or GMs or presidents, that sort of thing? How can those guys try and help as well, like an individual at a club or even a group of people at a club? Because you do see it at a local level just as much as you would in a professional level.
Yeah, 100%. You'd probably find it more because, you know, you get players coming up from junior ranks, you got players coming from other clubs, and you're sitting there after a game and, it's 5-6 o'clock and, you know, the races might be on and they want to get involved with the punters club. They want to have a few beers and feel included with the boys. I think it's important to create an environment where, you know, gambling isn't the main outlet of fun. And I think that's really important because, you know, if it's fine to be going to sit down, in front of the TVs and all that sort of stuff. But if everyone's just glued up at the TV and, the only reason blokes are up and about is because they're looking up at the races and they're winning money, then that's not the environment. That's creating an environment where, you know, an addiction might be 1 out of 50 players at the club, but that's 1 out of 50 that could have been avoided. So I think the big thing for presidents and all that stuff is just to keep talking about it. I feel like it's a bit of a taboo subject, the gambling and the punters club, and because it's so ingrained in our culture. But there's been so many people who've been involved in punters clubs, and then they've gone on and unfortunately, like, some of them take their own lives because, like, they get themselves into such a hole. So it's just about creating an environment where, you know, you can have your punters clubs, but make sure, like, you're always talking to each other, like, oh, how's the financial situation? All right, boys, we're going to pull it back this week. It's not $50 or $100 this week. We're only going to chuck $10 in, just to give everyone a bit of a chop out. So, yeah, it just can't be the main outlet of fun because there's plenty of other great things that, you know, football clubs actually provide, especially at the local level. Like, I know I can't wait to go back and play local footies. It's exciting.
Have you been able to find that sharing your story has been therapeutic for you as well?
Yeah, absolutely. It keeps me accountable. There's plenty of times, like, I'm going to be addicted to gambling for the rest of my life. So the more people I'm able to talk to about, like, it keeps me accountable to them. Like, if I walk out this door and I have a bet, like, I've let you two down because I've just told you all this stuff that, you know, that I meant, but then I go and do that and then I go, oh, well, I just shit in their faces. Like, I think it's really powerful being able to tell your story. I know there's a few players I've helped along the way that don't want to talk about it because they think it's embarrassing, and that's their choice. I'm never ever going to force someone to talk about it, but I felt from a personal point of view that the more I've spoken about it, the better off, and the more I can walk around my head high and go, you know what, I've been through this and then I've beaten it. So, you know, like, look where my life is now.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's just such a great story. I just love what you're doing. So thank you. So I think it's really, really good. In terms of the podcast, what's next for you guys? Are you, any goals you'd like to achieve from these conversations?
Yeah, I guess the big thing for me is that just trying to, like, use some connections to sort of, you know, dive deeper into some stuff. We've got an episode 22. We spoke to a professor who actually, like, runs a lot of studies and on gambling harm in the society with children and women as well, which is a side of things we've sort of never really seen. And we also hooked up with a guy who from the Big Step over in the UK, where he walks around to English Premier League clubs and tries to get them to take their sponsorships off their shirts. So that's something that's really exciting for us. Like, it's sort of giving us some inspiration. And we're also, like, trying to stay true to our sort of values of the podcast and giving athletes a platform to sort of, you know, speak about what they've been through and where they're a past player in the AFL. We've got Corey McKernan coming up very soon, so that's pretty exciting for us. We've got a couple of international athletes. We do it the old school way. We just slide into their DMs, and if 1 out of 10 hits, then
we know all about that.
Yeah, it's definitely not the old school way.
It's the most practical thing to do, don't worry
about that. So other than that, like, you know, we're really trying to work out sort of the direction I can take. Like, I don't know what's going to happen at the end of the year. Like, I'm out of contract and all that, so I'll just wait and see. But I'd really like a job in this sort of area or create my own thing, whether that's using the name and, you know, going to sporting clubs, footy clubs and whatever, and trying to sort of play, like, a role in creating an environment that, is a safe gambling environment or a non-gambling environment. And also not making gambling, like, the main revenue for places, trying to change that whole dynamic where a lot of, especially footy clubs down in Victoria, like, a lot of them have the pokies and stuff like that still. So trying to change that and trying to bring in different avenues of revenue, and then, trying to help. There's not a lot of athletes at the moment who are actually, like myself, talking about gambling addiction. So being able to actually go to sporting clubs and talk to that. And then the other thing I think will be important is sort of where it started when I was 16, 18, going to high schools and talking to the boys and girls about that sort of stuff, I think would be very good as well.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, you know, being involved in sporting clubs like forever and obviously go to school and uni and those sort of things, like it's really something you don't get a lot of education around. I think, you know, our conversations have come a long way when you talk about mental health and those sort of things, and they are continuing to progress. But in terms of, you know, that gambling education, there really isn't that much. And as you said, whether or not it's a like a taboo topic or not, there just isn't the education around it. And hopefully, I mean, through this podcast, but absolutely what you're doing is being able to educate people further through that. So do you think that after footy will be up in Brisbane, we'll be coming back to Victoria? What's plans, or is it just all loose? You just wait and see what happens?
Yeah, it'll be, I'm not sure. So my wife's pregnant, so it's due in 6 weeks. So yeah, we'll just wait and see. I'm pretty certain I know what's going to happen at the end of the year, but I'll wait for the tap on the shoulder. But other than that, I'm like, my brother lives up here. He still plays footy up here. I'd love to play with him, but I'd also love to get back to my local club down in Lara, get back there and have a run around in the hoops. So yeah, wherever it takes me. If there's any Victorian football clubs that are looking for a player next year, maybe they can just...
Oh, don't tell Jake that. He's a big recruiter, actually.
Now, Al, it's funny that you mentioned that, because a former teammate of yours plays for my local footy club now, Greensboro. And I did mention to him that you were coming on the show, and he just sort of lifted the lid a little bit. We've obviously had some pretty heavy and genuine conversations so far on the podcast. So it is always nice to just sort of lighten it up as we come towards the end of a conversation. And I was wondering if you could lift the lid on a little story for us. He reckons that, and I won't name him yet, most of the people out there will probably know who it is, but he reckons that you're the only player ever to be put on the injury list from an incident that happened on your way to the best and fairest.
Oh, gee whiz. Yeah, so I was driving. So I reckon it's Belly, because Belly plays it.
Didn't last long, did it?
So we're on the way to Best and Fairest, and I don't know, it was spooky. Like, I had a feeling something was going to go wrong that day, and I had my hand up against the back of the driver's headrest. And a car from the left lane, like there was four lanes, so the far left lane has taken a violent right, and we've just T-boned him. And I'd had a few collarbone surgeries at that stage, and jagged my collarbone. Oh. Yeah, it hurt. Thankfully, nothing was wrong, but like, just I've been through a bit of trauma with my collarbone. So yeah, no, that was weird. My collarbone's a completely different story. I don't know if Bally told you about that, but when I broke my plate, I was actually sitting in the team meeting, and I went to grab the chair in front of me, and I don't know what happened, but the plate snapped in my collarbone, and I was like, I was like, what has just happened?
More importantly, how did you go in the BNF?
No, I don't think I didn't play a game that year. I couldn't get that. Okay.
No one's asking where Ellen is.
Yeah, me and Belly were just whacking away in rehab together.
He did mention that, and he has inserted himself into every story that he's told also, so we should preface that. He wanted to remind you of a time where you guys could go and watch the Brisbane Bandits, obviously the local baseball team, yep. I think, up in Brisbane, and do you yearn for the good old days when you could just go and drink wild mooses at the Bandits games? Because Brisbane players wouldn't be getting noticed by the Brisbane public at that time.
Yeah, that was it was a different era back in the 2015, 2016 days, when you could sort of just float about and get away with a fair bit. It was pretty funny. I just had my second or third collarbone surgery, and I was sitting in hospital. I was high as a kite on, you know, all the drugs, all the painkillers, and I'm sitting there watching the Bandits game on YouTube, and I knew I got the boys' tickets, and I'm sitting there and I'm watching them like drink these wild mooses. And like, as the game goes on, like I just see them stacking up across the screen. I was like, I don't know if this is a good look, boys. I'm like, I don't know how many people are watching this, but I'm counting about 80 here. And I don't know if it's the drugs or not.
Oh dear. Another question. He thinks that you're a bit of a craft beer connoisseur. What's your favourite craft beer that you're running with at the moment?
Hello.
There's a company up here called Black Hops. I don't know if you boys have come across it, but they seem to drop a limited release every now and again. So not so much into the getting absolutely sent. I'm more of a sit down and sort of
a connoisseur.
More of a quiet night on the Wild Mooses.
Have a dabble on the 8% alcohols and really taking it in. So, the Black Ops scene, I'm a big fan of like the Bolters, and I think that's what me and Bally sort of, got acquainted on a couple of times, just, sitting back and enjoying the Bolters.
And one more from our great friend Thomas. I'm not sure he's listened to a show since he was on it, so we could probably throw plenty of shade his way. But you've mentioned that you do have a kid on the way, and he said this will be a nice way to finish. So if it is a boy, will you be naming it Tom in recognition of the most overpaid, funniest, injury-prone and angry human to ever get drafted to Brisbane?
Oh, geez, he was angry. I'm not sure about the overpaid bit. We did need some players, so when he came. But, I was very lucky that, struck up a very good relationship with Tom. And unfortunately, a lot of our time was spent in rehab together. But, still able to be really great friends with him, and absolutely no chance that this boy will be named Thomas.
Put a straight line through that one.
Sorry, I'll have a chat to him about that.
more of an Alan Jr. type setup, you reckon?
Yeah, something like that. I'd prefer that over Thomas. My middle name's Thomas, so.
So is mine. I reckon everyone's middle name is Thomas, except for Jake's.
Except for me. So 2 out of 3.
Ain't bad.
He's done well there.
Yeah, very good.
Plenty more banter.
Absolutely, Alan.
At Greensboro.
Get on. I might get down there too, just for the banter. If we're all signing up, Alan, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on, mate. Honestly, just an amazing story, and love the work that you're doing. Again, if you've got anything else to plug other than Addicted to the Game, or
just if anyone's struggling with gambling, as I said, you can jump onto www.gamblinghelponline.org.au or just check in Turning Point into your browser, and there's something that I wish I knew more about when I was sort of going through what I am. And it's free, it's confidential, and it's available 24/7, which is the best thing about it. So if anyone's struggling with gambling, or they know anyone who is, there's that service there.
Beautiful. Alan Christensen, thank you so much for coming on, mate.
Thanks, fellas. Thanks for having me.
The Magoos.
Benny, there it was. An absolutely fantastic chat with Alan Christensen. We thank him so much. Head out and listen to his podcast as well. He's had some really cool guests on, and his story himself is absolutely worth going back and having a listen to in his own words on his own podcast, Addicted to the Game. As we mentioned off the top, there's a whole lot of online resources available. If those conversations did stir you up or make you feel a certain way, make sure you jump onto gamblinghelponline.org.au. That Alan also mentioned some resources, as well as Lifeline Beyond Blue, Kids Helpline, those sort of things. If you are struggling, it was a bloody good chat, wasn't it, Ben?
Yeah, it was a great chat. And even if you don't want to reach out to those sort of ones just yet, or you don't feel the need, again, as we say every most weeks, just checking on a mate, especially at the moment. COVID's definitely taken its toll, and it's on certain days it takes a toll with myself as well. It does get, the four walls do get a bit smaller, and it is a difficult time that we're all going through, but we all need to band together. And even the Magoos, if you want to DM us too, more than happy for a chat, seriously. Absolutely fantastic to have Alan on. That was great, Jake.
Yeah, he's it's just such a good story, and we're really lucky to be able to help him share that, and hopefully it does have an impact on some people. And make sure you go and hit up his podcast and support those guys who are doing some really cool work. We know that we're dropping this early in the week, this episode, but we will be back later in the week with our regular footy focused show, with all the back-to-back games not occurring at the moment. We've got a little bit too much time on our hands, so we're starting to get a little bit creative. Make sure you like, share, subscribe, all those things on the socials, in your podcast apps, all those fun things, and we'll see you again very shortly.
Peace.
The Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos.